The HBO satirical news show Last Week Tonight features John Oliver, the Daily Show veteran who, besides being pretty funny, is British. That served him well this week when the biggest international story of the season broke across the pond.
The UK this week voted to leave the European Union, a decision that has shaken the world. And not in a Muhammad Ali beating Sonny Liston kind of way, more in a those IKEA meatballs you love contain horse kind of way.
It was a huge story for economists and for Brits worldwide, and of course for the Prime Minister, who was compelled to announce his resignation.
David Cameron announced he would be stepping down in the wake of the vote, which should make me happy, but in this situation, it doesn't. It's like catching an ice cream cone out of the air because a child was hit by a car. I mean, I'll eat it. I'll eat it. But it's tainted somehow.
Well, all joking aside, there are a lot of people quite upset, people whose lives feel very deeply affected by the impending Brexit. And some of those people have close connections to the Kansas City metro area. I'm Brian Ellison, and welcome to Central Standard. Later, we'll be checking in at 18th and Vine as conversations continue there about investing in the future of that historic district. But first today, we're asking who cares about Britain's historic departure from the EU and why they care. Turns out that the ramifications for people here, personally and professionally, could be more than you might think. Bartholomew Dean teaches at KU, but hails from the UK. Bart, welcome to you.
Thank you ever so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here, and feel free to call me Bart. In this part of the world, it goes over very well, but I'm Bartholomew Crispin Dean.
Bart it is.
Thank you very much.
So help us understand your connection to the United Kingdom.
Well, I was born in England, in London, 1963. My parents are English. My entire family is English. As a small child, we left the UK, traveled to Canada, and eventually found ourselves in the United States as immigrants. During my youth, I spent many summers in the UK. Was educated as well at Oxford, had a postdoc at the University of London. So as an academic, I have close connections and also personal connections, given that I'm an outlier in the sense that all of my family, so to speak, still resides in the UK or their colonies, such as the United States. But I should strike that.
Well, yes,
pardon
I
me.
I think we'll have to get rid of that. History has turned the page there.
I
know you live here now, obviously, and have for some time, but does the UK still feel like home in some sense?
Indeed. I mean, this is an issue of the cultural dimensions. I think certainly when I discuss this with my students, they immediately talk about, well, the downfall and the stock, blah, 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 which is, you know, significant. But we need to be thinking about the cultural dimensions as well. As an anthropologist, we study things such as culture, identity, nationalism. I was taught, certainly over the past generation, the importance of globalization. Now I think social scientists, other folks dealing with looking at the world today are questioning that. The EU, as all of us know, is based on the principles of the freedom of exchange of ideas, peoples, things. Now, as somebody who works in the world of ideas, that becomes quite problematic. So
I'm curious, you mentioned that your whole family still lives in the UK. Did you talk to them in the months leading up to this vote?
Indeed.
What were those conversations like?
To be very personal about this, I can say, to my best of my knowledge, my mother and her younger brother are on very opposite sides, in the sense that I have participated in all sorts of email exchanges, which my mother has a very different perspective, which I share. And my uncle has, let's get out of the UK.
And are these good-natured disagreements?
I think that some of the disagreements have led to polarization, certainly familial polarization to some extent. But certainly what we should be concerned about is the rise of xenophobia. I think that is extremely important, particularly coming from, quote, England or my country, end quote, when we think about those who tried to speak out against the rise of xenophobia. Well, we saw the 1930s, what eventually happened.
Yeah, so. It's interesting to me when I, because yours isn't the only story I've heard of families being sort of on very opposite, very polarized sides of this debate. And it strikes me that folks who might otherwise have similar backgrounds or similar worldviews end up in very different places on something like this. And that it seems more emotional than I'd expect. It's not just a political difference of opinion.
No, it's not just, and I think that the, you know, you raise an excellent point here. It's to do with sovereignty. And we in the world have difficulty in dealing with pluralism and cultural autonomy. Certainly the Welsh aren't necessarily feeling wonderful historically about being part of England. Likewise, the Scots, Northern Ireland. So this is not just a question of nationalism, but it's also a question of religion. I think of my own family. Part of my family members are Catholic. Others are Protestants. So these become, you know, infinitely more complicated than just the economics, as I say.
And since the vote, since the obviously polarized vote, 52% to 48%, what has been the reaction of your family who are still there, the ones who came out on the losing side?
Well, if you were to inquire into my Facebook and you say, well, a number of the people clearly or agree with Bartholomew's position, and other members of my family do not, such as it's a good thing we're out. But I also think, as a parent, I think about my children who have they're U.S. citizens, but their mother's Jamaican, their father's English. I think about their future, which is very different than you know, the future that I had imagined, which is greater flexibility, so that the possibilities of my children residing in the EU or getting gainful employment are different. So I think that for youth in the UK, many, not all, feel somewhat cheated by this.
And do you, as you have sort of watched the discussion and even how it's played out in your own family, has it had an impact on your thinking about the issue?
Very much so. I think that initially I was very determined to say, remain in the EU. I don't necessarily think I retract on that position, but I see the own contradictions in my own work, where I work with Indigenous peoples who have been marginalized historically from the state, who want their autonomy. And so, I think it's too early to really have definitive, but I think that we need to continue to keep on the forefront of what's going on, what's unfolding. I mean, from issues as from economics, Kansas, my home state, the UK is number 5 in terms of trade partners. So, that's something that people don't necessarily recognize, I think. As an anthropologist also, underscoring the importance not just to speak English.
Well, I want to continue to pursue your views as an anthropologist, but I know that you also have a number of KU colleagues who have ties to the UK and who have a variety of academic backgrounds that contribute to that. Raj Bala has been with us before here on Central Standard. He teaches international law at KU, and he joins us by Skype this morning from France. Bonjour, Raj.
Bonjour. It's coming up on time to say bonsoir here in France. Yes, it's a delight to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad you could join us. And I imagine that the continent has been an interesting place to be as this unfolded last week.
Yeah, absolutely. The reactions here on the continent and in France are shock, disappointment, if not depression, sadness, and alarm, concern, fear. The gamut, very little in the way of happiness that I've observed. People are very sad and upset and concerned about the Brexit and its ramifications.
Did anyone see it coming? I mean, obviously, everyone knew it would be a close vote, but it sounds like people were still very surprised that it actually happened.
Very few. In fact, the night before, I was out dining with very prominent lawyers from in Paris, and they were quite confident that there would not be a Brexit. And even, of course, till about 1 a.m. In Paris time, it was thought that there would not be a Brexit. It was only around about 2, 3 a.m. that looked like the tide was turning. And most of the companies here in France that have offices in the UK, or vice versa. British headquartered companies that have offices in France, they were either in denial, and maybe still are, or they just thought that, no, it's too irrational an economic decision to do a Brexit. So they were looking at it maybe a little bit from their own interest, thinking, well, surely we're happy being in the EU. It's good for us with the common market and the common external tariff and being part of this customs union. And so surely the rest of the society in the UK sees it that way, too. And in a way, there was almost perhaps an inability to empathize with some of the, schisms going on that that Bart nicely covered.
Yeah, I know you are a very widely recognized expert on international law, and I'm sure you have a lot of opinions about this from your professional standpoint. But I guess I'm curious, does this feel personal to you as well?
It does. It does. Not unlike Bart, my educational background is partly in the UK. It's thanks to Her Majesty's government that I was educated in the UK. I was blessed to receive a Marshall Scholarship, and it was at Oxford where I met my wife. And part of the, you could say, maybe informal obligation of Marshall Scholars is to foster the special relationship that began many a long time ago, but was furthered by the Marshall Plan. And so when times are difficult and when Britain faces uncertainty, I think it's sort of, I feel a bit of a personal obligation to do what I can. And if I might put the idea right out there up front, one of the things I've suggested is that it would be useful for the United States to consider immediately offering Britain a free trade agreement on the same terms and conditions that the U.S. has negotiated with its Asian partners through the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think the earlier statements that Britain would go to the back of the queue on free trade agreements are not the direction we want to follow. Instead, I think we should remember that we have this special relationship, and that we should offer them the economic and political support they would get through a TPP-like FTA.
You know, I'm curious. You have these close educational ties with the UK. Bart shared a little of his educational as well as family ties. What is the nature of that special relationship today? I mean, you both teach in Kansas. We don't think of this as sort of a hotbed of British culture, and yet there seems to be this personal connection.
Well, if I could,
go ahead, Raj, and then we'll come to you.
No, go ahead, Bart.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry. It's hard with Raj on Skype in France. Let's start with Raj.
Well, culturally, the common values, the common constitutional ideas, are something, of course, we share across the country with the British, and economically, they're very important. For Kansas, the UK is our fifth largest export destination and our third largest source of foreign direct investment. For Missouri, the UK is also very important as an export destination, as is Germany. And in fact, direct investment, the UK is the top source. And we're talking about jobs in Kansas that account for maybe 69,500 jobs and about 97,300 jobs in Missouri that are connected directly or indirectly to the UK or to prominent EU members like Germany. So there's the historical constitutional value connection. There's the economic connection. And then there are the common problem connection, which Bart mentioned. There's the rise of extremism. Many people, don't know that there are these horrific attacks going on in the UK against Poles, for example, Polish people. And in France, it's amazing to think that now many Jewish families are and Jewish individuals are leaving France and migrating to Israel, making Aliyah, because they don't feel secure in France. And so when we have a decision to withdraw, like the UK has made, it has fueled more extreme right-wing behavior that lashes out against religious and ethnic minorities.
And that's a conversation that does start to sound a little more familiar, at least to many ears, when we talk even about American culture today. Bart?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it would be false. Some people have said, okay, this is identical potential that will happen in the United States with possible Trump victory, growing walls, that sort of stuff. But we need to think about some potential similarities in terms of the xenophobia that Raj has mentioned. Let's keep in mind that Sadiq Khan, who's the mayor, Lord Mayor of London, has had death threats. The prior Lord Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, who was born in New York City, after all, has led a very, very, I would argue, xenophobic campaign, or certainly played into that. But also from an academic point of view, as an academic, we need to really think about the freedom that ideas thrive on, creativity. For when we look at the major academic bodies, British Academy, we go down the list, they're against this for a wide variety of reasons. Certainly for folks in the United States who plan to study in the UK, mm-hmm. that may not be possible.
Well, I want to continue to explore that. I also want to invite our listeners to share their take, especially if you feel like you have a vested interest personally or professionally. Does Brexit matter to you? How come? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also write to us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. We should mention that in the next hour, KCUR's Up to Date, we'll have the smart money experts in. They're talking about the impact of Brexit on your personal finances. But when we come back, we'll continue our look at the personal and professional impact for folks here in KC, and we'll hear from one of your favorite former KCUR voices about her take. I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about the Brexit vote and its impact personally and professionally on Kansas City folks. We've got Raj Bala with us by Skype from France, where he's traveling right now, and also here in the studio is Bart Dean. But we thought we could really have this conversation best if we checked in with KCUR's own former resident Brit, Kim Noble. She's on the phone with us from her new home in St. Petersburg, Florida. Kim, welcome back to KCUR's airwaves.
Reverend Ellison, how the dickens are you?
It is so good to hear your voice.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I rearranged my whole calendar when I was called yesterday just for that connection with KCUR that I miss so dearly. You know, it's true. All the people who go away say there's no station like KCUR, and I'm joining those throngs.
Well, I can assure you, you are very deeply missed here as well. Since you last told us about KCUR's program schedule and read our advertisements, what have you been up to anyway?
Well, I've been eating pizzas with anchovies on them, and that remains in aluminium foil.
Of course you have. I was trying to work aluminium into my script today, but I couldn't figure out how. So remind us, Kim, where you were born and when you came to the U.S. anyway.
Well, I was born in the original Plymouth.
The real UK. One.
The real one, right, from whence the Pilgrim Fathers sailed. And I came to live in the States in 86, came to Kansas City in 88, and of course, I left the year that the Royals had their best season ever.
And from knowing you, I know that you've never stopped. What was that, Kim? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Go on, Brad.
from knowing you, I know that you've never stopped holding fast to your British identity. What's it like to be so far from home with all this conversation happening about Brexit?
In some ways it's good because I can get very hot under the collar about it. And I do want to throw in that even though I was born in Plymouth, my mother's from Northern Ireland, and my folks now live in Northern Ireland. And the implications there are enormous beyond belief of this vote.
That's because Northern Ireland, as well as Scotland, have talked about actually separating from the UK.
Well, that won't happen, certainly not in Northern Ireland. But what I didn't really realize until the vote, and we all thought, of course, that it would go, yes, let's stay, is that the South already has seen a surge in passport applications from Brits, because there probably will no longer be free passage between the North and the South, because the South is part of the EU. So, for instance, I fly into Dublin and drive to Belfast. When I go home now, I will have to stop at a border control. And Northern Ireland has the largest open borders between EU countries. So that will be, if they don't set up borders within Ireland, then the borders coming into Northern Ireland are going to be colossal. And I think what many people don't realize is how that could affect the economy and the stability of Northern Ireland.
So did you talk with your family back in the UK before the vote?
Not really. I didn't think I needed to. My parents are in their early 90s. Brian, they didn't vote.
Really?
It's not going to affect us.
How would they have voted?
Probably to stay.
Yeah.
But they're so old, it's not going to affect them. It's not going to affect their savings. It's not going to affect them at all. And, you know, they've got old and a little bit doddery and selfish. I saw that one of my cousin's friends on Facebook told her Facebook friends as to which way to vote. Didn't know, didn't look into it, just told her Facebook friends as to which way to vote. And I will tell you a funny story is that my second cousin is sleeping on the sofa. He voted stay. His wife voted go. She won't cook for him and has withheld their marital rights.
Oh, my. Well, yeah. I guess there are some very significant personal implications to this. How about for you, Kim? I mean, you obviously live in the U.S. and have for a long time now, but does it still feel like it affects you very personally?
Well, it does, because certainly all my family is in Northern Ireland, and in the wake of the troubles, Northern Ireland received a considerable amount of money to rebuild from the EU, and about 90% of Northern Ireland's farming income comes from Europe. So all of my family, who are farmers, will be significantly affected by this. On a more micro level, I have some savings in the UK, which, as I say this, thankfully I have declared to the IRS. I won't be touching them for a long time.
Yeah.
And as I get older and look to those to support me when I can't work anymore, I'm hoping there will be a rebound, but I certainly won't be touching any of them for a couple of years. So on a financial level, deeply. On a level of safety for my family in Northern Ireland, there's the fear that the conflict will return due to the economic status, due to the uncertain times, due to the fact that it will just be different. And as somebody, your previous guest talked about, the rise of extremism as people get poorer, so the tendency to being extreme rises, right?
Yeah, that really is a frightening possibility, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, let's stay with us, if you would, Kim. I want to talk to a couple of our listeners who have called in to share some of their perceptions of this. Let's talk to Nina in Kansas City, Missouri. Nina, thanks for calling.
Hi. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I am a British citizen. I've lived in Kansas City for 15 years. I'm married to an American. I have my children have British and American citizenship and passports. I benefited from being a part of the EU as a Brit when I was a student back in 1992. I had a wonderful scholarship for a free ride at the University of Venice for a year because there's an EU scholarship program called Erasmus where any where students from countries of any EU countries can if they receive the scholarship they can
study at anywhere in the EU.
Exactly, they can study at another university, another country, and no fees are due.
So you've benefited personally from the existence of the EU and from Britain's participation in it, the UK's.
Right.
And so now what? How does this affect you? Is it just an emotional impact or is it more than that?
There's the immediate thing is an emotional impact because I hate the feeling of. Things of borders closing down, more borders, and there's always expense associated with that. I think, of course, it seems to me that a huge waste of money to redraw all the bureaucracy. But more than anything else, I tend to think that going towards smaller countries, making more borders between countries, and making it harder for people to enter and exit countries is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Personally, I am. My family has lived in Scotland for two generations. My grandfather moved there just after the Second World War. But we are an English and Indian family, Asian Indian. My father moved there as a political refugee and happened to have friends in Scotland. Ended up living in Scotland. So 2 years back when there was the referendum on Scottish independence, I was very much against it. Very much against Scottish independence because I felt that would in the aftermath of
putting up more borders is bad.
Putting up more borders,
right?
Suddenly my family would be outsiders in a country we lived in.
But Nina, now, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Nina. We have a number of calls.
Sure.
But would now you support Scottish independence in light of the UK's departure from the EU?
Yes, if it meant becoming part of the EU, but I would if it meant becoming part of the EU and remaining part of the EU.
Well, Nina, I appreciate your sharing your perspective from here in Kansas City. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Bart Dean still with us from KU. I guess professionally, as an anthropologist, you've had a chance to sort of observe this, and we're hearing that from these callers and from Kim, that families are divided, and a lot of it has to do with this fear of nationalism that contributed to this.
Absolutely. I think Raj underscored it, many of the commentators. Kim mentioned it as well. Economically, this does not make sense. Kim's note in terms of her family, my family in terms of their money, it's taken a hit. So economically, it does not make sense. Hence, we need to come back to other sorts of explanations, such as nationalism. The war, the Great War, not the First World War, the Second World War, is still very much alive and well for people of my generation who grew up with all those sorts of stories. So if you're a Frenchman and you're coming into London and Waterloo Station, you're not necessarily happy about that. Mm-hmm. There was mention of the Poles. Well, the Poles and the Brits were quite friendly with each other through history. So this is a need to unlock some of the history that we've forgotten. The Commonwealth, obviously we had a number of people, but that's huge implications. If you're from South Africa, Australia, we can go to Canada, we can go down the list. So,
do you feel like there's going to be impact on the educational realm?
Yes, absolutely. As your former caller in who mentioned the Erasmus program, which is now, you know, at great jeopardy, so that roughly, sorry for my lack of figures, but we'll say hundreds, tens of thousands of EU students, foreign students are in the UK studying. If those borders, if the money dries up, what happens to the future? Not a good move.
And Raj Bala, also at KU as a law professor and a dean, Raj, you were a Marshall Scholar. Do you see any changes for kind of the prestige of these international scholarships that send people to Oxford and Cambridge?
Yes, absolutely. There's that possibility. Let me offer one or two points from an economic and legal perspective. One is the false notion that underlies the xenophobic right wing, that free trade and freer migration of peoples is the cause of unemployment and job loss and income loss. Trade is not the major cause of these adjustment problems of unemployment and income loss. Time after time, in country after country, empirically, the evidence is very clear that the people who are most likely to suffer job redundancies or wage declines are suffering them because of technological change, and because of low human capital, a lack of education. And so a lot of the xenophobic right wing makes this false assumption that it's the customs union of the European Union and the migrants from Poland or Romania that are coming in that are causing their job loss, and that's just utterly false. And here, political leadership is necessary to get that point across what the true causes are, and also to fund education adequately, so that the younger generation are able to take advantage of customs unions and free trade agreements.
And Kim Noble is still with us by phone now in Florida, but living in Kansas City a long time as a British expat here, or a Northern Irish one, I guess, a UK expatriate here. Kim, I know that you're not alone. Did you ever gather with other UK citizens here? Is there a community in Kansas City that gets together and talks about these things?
I was not aware of one. I've talked enough for everybody, Brian, but there certainly is here.
Yeah, and what are you hearing from the other expats in St. Petersburg?
Well, kind of similar things to what I've heard already, and that first of all, they thought it was going to be a foregone conclusion that we would stay. But that older vote that has already been cited, that World War II mentality, the vote that comes from the idea that we have our bedrock in the idea of rule of Britannia, and it's the same reason that the UK initially refused to go into the EU, was this idea of being somewhat special. I think we believed we could have a special membership, and instead of becoming fully committed, becoming responsible and asking, instead of looking to the politicians to wave a magic wand and change everything, it's what can I do to be the change? My fear is this is going to roll over into American politics, because for me, Brexit, yes, is the equivalent of the thought process that is going behind the building of the wall to keep America safe.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to give you the last word, Raj Bala. Do you see implications for the rest of the world in what's happened, including the U.S., including right here in the Midwest, that should be giving folks pause or thought as they look to the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Britain's exit from the EU creates a huge problem for businesses in goods or services across the world, because those businesses, whether they're in the United States or in India, have been relying on the British membership in the EU for access to the UK market as part of the common market. Now, to access the UK market, it's possible that the UK will need to drop brand new tariff schedules and schedules for services. And that means the UK may faces the prospect of negotiating with upwards of 161 other WTO
schedules or taxes. You're talking about taxes for services, basically.
Schedules are lists of the taxes, mm-hmm,
right?
On what each good and what each service is. And the British market has benefited from being in the common market for since roughly 1972. And I think both Kim and Bart's points are very much worth recalling history here in the culture, because Britain asked twice during the time of Charles de Gaulle, when he was president of France, to enter the European Economic Community, and there was a de Gaulle veto. De Gaulle's successor, Pompidou, lifted that veto on the third request from Britain. So Britain went into this market and has benefited from it from around the world. So, and now this is quite a stunning turnaround.
Yeah, these are not new questions, and I bet we haven't heard the last of them either. I want to thank our guests, Raj Bala, Rice Distinguished Professor and Associate Dean for International and Comparative Law at KU Law School, Bart Dean, Associate Professor of Anthropology at KU, and Kim Noble, who's taking her vitamins down in Florida these days. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, it's time to take a break. But when we come back, KCUR Central Standard will get a sense of how 18th and Vine is changing and what's at stake for its future. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us.